But glad you guys are here. Matt was kidding with me earlier. We've got a small church in here already. And so glad you guys are here. All right. Hey, so my name is Taylor Hammett, and I'm the minister at the Corners Church of Christ, previously known as the Peachtree Corners Church of Christ in Atlanta, Georgia. And we'll get into that story here in just a minute about why and how we changed our name and things like that. But if you want to take notes or there'll be a copy of these notes online later on as well. So if you miss something, again, you can go on and download a PDF of these notes, and you can keep that for you. So, all right, well, let's get going. I want to tell you guys, first of all, that I'm a small church product. I grew up in a church in rural Alabama, Ohatchee Church of Christ. And we had a full-time minister most of the time. But that was it. My dad volunteered as a youth minister a couple of the times. We had other members in the church who volunteered to serve as worship leaders and youth ministers and all that kind of stuff. On any given Sunday, we might have had anywhere from 110 to 200. And so depending on your church size, that might seem like it's kind of a large church. But we kind of made the most of what we had in that place. And I can say that I don't know of, I'm sure there are lots of them out there, but I don't know of a church that small who's put out as many people who are involved in first career church work as that church was. I look back at my youth group and I look back at other people who have come out of that church because they were given a chance to lead and a chance to have responsibility and a chance to grow and mature at an early age, both men and women, who have now come out and are serving our churches in really profound ways. And so I'm thankful for small churches. I'm the minister at what I consider and what statistics consider to be a small church as well. On any given Sunday, we have, I guess, about 170 to 200 people, depending on the Sunday. And that's come quite a ways from about 5 years ago when there were 35 to 50 people, and they were gathering up, kind of huddling up in the auditorium, trying to decide what to do with the building. Right? Maybe you've been there. You've had those conversations where things aren't looking well. Your things aren't looking good. Things aren't going well. You're not sure what the future holds. And so you've been in those meetings where you have to decide, are we going to keep going or are we going to close the doors and maybe give our property to someone else and let them do the most of it and disband and go elsewhere? And so that's the history of the church that I'm with now. Is about 5 years ago, they were having those conversations. I've only been there for about 14 months, 15 months, somewhere in there. And so part of the story I'll share with you today is the story that I inherited. So the church about 5 years ago was struggling, trying to figure things out. Over that time, between that five-year period and about 14 months ago, the church had rebounded and had come to a healthy place. You could expect to see anywhere from maybe 120 to 135 that were there a year ago. They had a vocational minister, someone who spoke every Sunday but had a full-time job elsewhere, and he was doing a great job, but the church kind of had to make that call. Do we want to keep going in that direction, or do we want to look at maybe hiring someone full-time to come in and do some things that we feel like we can't do otherwise? And so that's where I entered into that picture. I was invited to come in and work with this church as my first full-time preaching gig, right, or lead minister gig. And so there was a lot of uncertainty in the hire. I didn't know what I was doing. They didn't know what they were getting into when they hired me. They had tried me out. You know, you come in and you speak and you have those meetings and you tell people all the things that you could see happening in this place. But we just kind of have been figuring things out for the past 14 months. And so I want to share with you guys, honestly, things that I can't say are tried and tested and true in our context, but things that are currently working for us, if that makes sense. So the verdict is still out. You know, we'll check back in 5 years and see how we're doing. But for the past 14 months, we've been able to implement some principles and ideas and strategies that have not only kind of gotten us to a stable place, but what we would consider to be a somewhat thriving place. The Corners Church of Christ is a pretty unique place. We're multilingual and therefore multi-ethnic. We're multi-generational, not just in an accidental sense, but we came into the church with about 60% of 60 and over. And over the past year, we've gained 60 new people. And of that 60, most of them have been 40 and under. And so we're continuing to minister to and love on the people who have always been there, and yet creating an environment that is attractive to those who are looking to place membership or belong to a body of believers that are doing some work there in our city and our community. And so we feel like things are in an upward trajectory, is the language that we use. right? So let me share with you guys, I guess, a few things that I feel like might help you if you're working in a small church. Raise your hand if you're at what you consider to be a small church. Hopefully that's everybody if you're in this class, or maybe you just have a great passion for small churches and you're hoping to help someone else out. But here are a few things that I hope to share with you over the next few minutes that we have kind of taken and made work for us. All right. The first, accept who you are. Accept who you are. This seems like maybe a no-brainer, but it's a principle that we had to come to grips with. We had to decide that we were a small church and that was okay. Right? What we came to believe is that God loves small. Right? He's not against big. I believe He blesses big churches and mega churches and healthy, thriving churches of all shapes and sizes. But we believe that God actually does love small churches, right? And if you read Scripture, you look at Scripture and notice the narrative that's there, over and over again, God is reaching into the world and using that which the world considers to be small and doing pretty significantly great things with it. You think about, think about Noah, for example, right? Noah and his story. God reaches this frustration point, presses the reset button in some way or another, and how does he start over? With 8 people. Think about Israel's story. And you think about at the end of Genesis, 70 people have migrated to Egypt and are living life together there. But God takes that group of 70, right, and raises up an entire nation and then mobilizes that nation to go into the rest of the world to be his voice, to be his witness, to be his proclaimers of the things that God really values and treasures. You think about David, King David, right, mighty David. But the story goes that when God was sending Samuel to anoint the next king, he goes in and he's looking over all the sons of Jesse, and what does he do? He overlooks David because of why? He's small, right? He's not considered mighty. And so we've gotten to a place where we actually believe that God loves small churches. God loves things that are small so that he can use them for great and mighty things. And we believe that it's important to accept who we are. I want to share with you guys a few things that the statisticians tell us about churches in America right now. The first is that 90% of churches in the world, not just America, but 90% of the churches in the world are less than 200 people. 90% of all the churches in the world are less than 200 people. So if you're at a small church, my sense is, in talking to small church leaders over the past 14 months, is that often you feel like you're alone, that you're isolated, that no one knows what you're going through, that no one's ever had to face the battles that you're facing in your context and at your place. And what we've come to understand is that even though we're a small church, we're not alone. In fact, 90% of the churches that are in our country are going through similar things that we're going through. And so we should be comfortable with being small. In total, 60% of Protestant, that is non-Catholic churches, have 100 or fewer adults on a typical weekend. So the majority of churches in our country have 100 adults or fewer. The average church size in America is about 76. It depends on which stat you look at. But 76 is the average church size here in the United States. And slightly less than 2% of the churches in our country have 1,000 members or more. So a lot of times we look around and we see the big churches in our city or in our region, and we get maybe envious because of who they are or what they're doing or the budget that they have and the resources that they have at their disposal. But what you need to understand is that they are in the upper 2% of all the churches that are in our country. They truly are unique in what they're able to do because there just aren't that many people who can do it. All right. Another thing to kind of remember as you're thinking about a small church, small is the new big. Have you heard that before? Small is the new big. And in Atlanta, we have several what's considered to be mega churches. North Point, one of the largest churches in the nation, is housed in Alpharetta, Georgia, just outside of Atlanta. About 32,000 people attend that church on any given weekend. They're going and blowing, right? But they'll tell you that the strategy to their growth is that they try really, really hard to stay small. And so even though they're this enormous organization, they pour time and resources into creating environments that honor smallness. And the way that they do that primarily is through their life group and small group ministry. And so churches that are that big are also trying to get small by building smaller venues. And so you have a lot of churches that are doing multi-site now. One of the reasons they're doing that is there's a trend in our country that is getting away from mega churches and is now preferring small. And so 12 Stone in our community, 12 Stone Church, which is part of the Wesleyan movement, has a large broadcast campus in north of Atlanta where they have several thousand people who gather every weekend. But they're in the process of building five smaller campuses all throughout the city of Atlanta because they realize that people prefer nowadays to get in smaller gatherings. And so if that's true, that people prefer small, what I want you to understand is that you're at an advantage in your community. You actually have what a lot of people want. What a lot of people are looking for is the kind of place that you already have access to in your church. And that's good news for you guys if you're a small church leader. Barna came out with some statistics over the past 5 years that kind of looked at small churches, and that's where we got some of our numbers about percentages of churches that are small. But he says that small churches are uniquely positioned to reach the coveted millennial generation, right? That 18 to 35-year-old demographic that millions, if not billions of dollars are spent on trying to figure out how to reach in marketing. He says that smaller churches have a substantial advantage in reaching out to the 18 to 35-year-olds. Any guess as to why? They're looking for community, right? They're looking for community. When you ask them what's the number one thing you're looking for in a church, they don't say worship. They don't say a certain preaching style. The number one thing that they say is that they're looking for a place to connect and belong and to be in relationship with other people. And so that's good news. If you're a small church, you're the kind of place, right, that might be open to accepting an 18 to 35-year-old. Now, we could actually have another breakout just on what that might look like and how to reach millennials and all that kind of stuff. There are some obstacles you might have to overcome as a smaller church because of your theology or the way that you practice that theology on any given Sunday. But that's a different breakout. And so I want you guys to realize, though, there is a unique opportunity in your community and in your church to be a place that attracts the 18 to 35-year-olds. Let's see. Here's another thing about kind of accepting who you are. If a person makes their way to your church on Sunday, chances are they know what to expect at some level when they walk through the door. And this is what I mean, that if they make it to your church and they see the church from the outside and they walk in and they look around and they notice that the church is small, they're not surprised by that, okay? They're comfortable by walking in the doors and being a part, potentially being a part of a smaller church, a smaller environment. And so what I want to encourage you guys to do as we think through some of this stuff over the next few minutes is to, number one, not let the idea of being small keep you from reaching people, that somehow you're at a disadvantage. Actually, you're at an advantage according to several things that have been put out in the past couple of years. But because of that, we have to be pretty intentional about who we are and how we go about doing things. And so we're going to talk about some of those things as we move forward. All right, so number one, accept who you are. Number two, accept where you are. Accept where you are. I don't mean your street address, okay? You might could change that if you have the capital and the resources to sell your building, to go into your city and buy a different building. But what I mean by accepting where you are is accept your place in your city or your community, okay? That you need to, as a small church, quit wishing for other things, but just kind of accept that God has placed you where he's placed you for many things. But one of those things is to be a witness and a light to the people who are all around you. And so I think a lot of times our small churches, we spend a lot of time thinking about how to love God really well. I know a lot of times in our discussions that happen in the Bible class, especially with a certain demographic of our church, we spend a lot of time thinking about correct doctrine, and we spend a lot of time thinking about what it means for us to worship God in the right way. And all of that is very important. I don't want to dismiss that. But a lot of times, we as smaller churches do a much poorer job at loving our neighbors. Okay? So hear me out. We do a really good job of attempting to love God to the best of our ability, to loving God really well. But one of the things we fail at as a smaller church is we just don't believe we can make a difference in our community, and therefore we fail to love our neighbors really well. And yet we all know that that's the core of the life that God has called us to live, right? To love God with everything that we have, and to love who else? Yeah, to love our neighbors. And so it's important that as a small church, you accept where you are, that you see that as an invitation from God to leverage who you are as a small church, where you are, to lean fully into the work of the kingdom of God. Okay? So accept who you are, where you are, to leverage yourself, to lean fully into the kingdom of God. And so, one of the things I wanted to kind of walk through is we're a church, roughly 200 or less, with the name up until about 7 months ago, Peachtree Corners Church of Christ. So that's a mouthful, first of all, Peachtree Corners Church of Christ, right? But as we started looking around, and this was not really news to anyone, but no one had ever kind of put the dots together, as we looked around, we were one of four churches in a mile and a half to 2 mile radius with the name Peachtree Corners something church. Okay. The largest was Peachtree Corners Baptist Church. They have about 800 to 1,000 people on any given Sunday. They're the flagship church in our immediate community. When you say Peachtree Corners, everyone guesses what else you're about to say, and their guess is Baptist Church. So when we moved into the community, my wife and I, we moved from about 30 minutes north down into Peachtree Corners. When we moved there and we started telling people where we were working and what we were trying to do, we'd say, we work at Peachtree Corners. And they'd say, oh, Baptist Church? We know exactly where that is. My kid went to preschool there, and we love their programs there and all that kind of stuff. And so what we did is we kind of took a step back from holding on to something as sacred that didn't necessarily need to be sacred, and that was our name. And we said, what could we do to kind of diversify who we are, where we are, and begin to establish some sense of identity in our community? And so all we did, right, it's really brilliant and really creative, is we dropped Peachtree off the name. And we just call ourselves the Corners Church. And so now, when we go into our community and we tell people we're the Corners Church of Christ, the first thing they say is, where is that? Okay, so we still haven't made it into our community yet. The second thing they say, once they realize where we are, is, oh, you guys are the church with a new sign. We really like that. And so by us changing our name, right, it's not known yet for loving the community. It's not yet known for being Jesus, right? It's the church with a new sign. But what it's done is it's created this really good conversation piece for us to have with our neighbors, with people in our community. And we say, yeah, you know, we're a church that's been there for about 25 years, but we're a church with a lot of life and a lot of families. And here's some things that we really care deeply about. And so it gives us an opportunity to tell people what our mission and what our vision is, and begin to invite people to come and be a part of that. And so it seems really comical, doesn't it? That you could change your name, you could put a new sign out there, and it would actually be something that God could use to insert you into the community. It would be something that you could do to actually have conversations with people. But what I want you to see is that you don't have to do really big things to make a big difference. When you accept who you are and you accept where you are, you can take little victories, and God can use those for really big things. Another thing that we are trying to do, I just told you that people know us as the church with the new sign, and not for a lot of other things. But one of the things we're really trying to do, and what I want to invite you guys to do, is to love your community really well. All right, so we were talking about we do a good job of loving God, but sometimes we fail at loving our community. But I want to challenge you guys as you're thinking about this session, and maybe later on this week as you're debriefing and talking with someone who's on your team, or you're calling someone back home, begin to think about what would it look like for you guys to love your city, to love your community really well. So this is what some of the things that we've done as we kind of think through how to do this. We're trying to become a champion of our city and for our city. And let me say that again. We're trying to become a champion of our city and for our city. So what that means for us is, as we look at our demographics that surround our building, we're uniquely positioned, I believe, because on one side of the highway, we have some of the top earners in all of Gwinnett County, which is the largest county in the state of Georgia. We have people who are going into neighborhoods and they're buying homes that start in the $700,000 price range. Okay, so as we look across the street, we have a certain demographic of people that live there, who think certain ways and who believe certain things and who value certain things as a family and as individuals. And so we have to be mindful of that if we want to be a church of our city. Okay? But as we look around the corner, literally around the corner from where we are, we have some of the poorest people in our community as well. And we're dedicated, we're committed to this idea of not just reaching across to the rich people in our city, okay, but actually reaching across all sections of our city. And so in our church right now, we have about 170 people who are there on any given Sunday. 60 of those attenders, 50 to 60 of those attenders, are Latino. Many of those whose first and only language is Spanish right now. And so we're faced with this really unique opportunity to think through what does Sunday look like with a kind of church that has 60 people whose first and only language is Spanish, as well as a group of children who are second generation whose first language is primarily English, but who know Spanish really well. And so what we're doing is we're trying to think through all of that because we want to be a city, a church of our city. But we also want to be a church for our city. And what that means is we're looking for ways to insert ourselves into our city and into our community to actually be making not just loose, abstract decisions that will cause us to love someone, but hands-on, concrete things that we can look at and say, this is how we're going to love our city really well. One of the things we've done is we started a not-for-profit 3 years ago called Corners Outreach. And you can look that up at cornersoutreach.org, and you can learn more about that organization. But essentially it's this. We've partnered with students who attend the Berkeley Lake Elementary School. These are students who primarily scored in the bottom 60% of test scores in their elementary school. And we've gone into a single neighborhood that has the largest representation of students who attend the school, and we've begun studying with them every single day throughout the week. So Monday through Friday, we have homework club from 3:30 till 5:30 in the afternoon. Every Saturday, we have a camp outreach event in which it doesn't matter if you need homework help or not, but all the children in this community are able to come out, participate in a camp outreach event, which is really just an excuse to have a lot of fun and to tell a Bible story and to have more fun and all that kind of stuff. And then in the summer, we run 10 weeks of camp Monday through Saturday. Monday through Saturday, 10 weeks of camp. And so over the past 3 years, we've been able to invest deeply in this community, not just with these children, but with their families, and begin to build relationships and begin to figure out how we could go about living life, not just at a distance, but living life alongside of them. Okay. So as you think about what does it look like for you to be a church of your city and for your city, the question has to be asked, what could you do in your city and your community to meet a very real need that's currently not being met? Okay. What could you do to meet a need in your city that's currently not being met? Another thing we're trying to do is to say yes to our community, to say yes to our city. So churches are really well known for all the things that you say no to or all the things that you don't believe, right? But we're trying really hard to tell people what we do believe and what it is that we might could do for them. And so that requires us to listen a lot. And so as we started Corners Outreach, one of the things we did is we went into Berkeley Lake Elementary School and we asked them, what can we do for you? And the first thing the principal said was, well, what do you want to do? And we said, no, that's not the question. What would you like for us to do? If you had a blank slate, if you could name it, right, if there's any one thing that we could do to help your school out, to help your children out, to help the students out, help your faculty out, what would it be? And that's how Corners Outreach was born. They said, well, we have a group of students who are failing profoundly. And if you could do something to help them out, that would really benefit us. So after 3 years of going in there, those students are now scoring in the upper 80th percentile of their scores. Again, so that's a way that you can make a concrete difference in your city. As we talk about the 18 to 34-year-old demographic, another thing that they're looking for is not just community, but they're actually looking for ways to live out their faith and to serve. Okay. So as we have attracted over the past 14 months, that 18 to 34-year-old group, the number one thing that they say they love about our church is that there is a chance for them to serve, a chance for them to serve. And so we can plug them into Corners Outreach. We can work with a small group of our 18 to 34-year-olds, and we can mobilize them to do specific things in our city. But the number one thing that singles and families are telling us that they come to our church is we love your vision and your mission that's committed to your community. And so they come in, they bind to that, they put up with other things, right? They put up with lack of programming, they put up with a lackluster children's area, to be honest with you. We've got faded white walls down the hallway, we've got really small classrooms. The classroom that our oldest daughter is in has about 11 people in it, and there are times when they have to share a seat, right? We're so crowded right now in that particular classroom. And so these families are willing to put up with some things, not all things, but some things, because they really buy into and they believe in the mission that we're attempting to live out in our church. So here's another thing that you can do as you think about what you might could do to be a church of and for your city. And this is kind of techy and geeky, so if this is not your first language, I understand, but you know, at some point you have to kind of get with it too, right? And so if it's not your language, then you need to hand it off to someone who can do it for you. But the thing that I do is I've signed up for every single Twitter account that I can find that's registered with Gwinnett County or Peachtree Corners, okay? And I look at the feed every day, and I look for opportunities that are happening in our city to get involved. And I connect with them online. You know, I let them know that we're pulling for them, we're cheering for them, we're praying for them. It gives us a way to contact the organizers of certain events and figure out how we might get involved to help. But I sign up for the Twitter feed because it lets me know all the things that are happening in my community much better than the evening news, right? I figure out when apartment fires happen. I figure out when someone's family has experienced a tragic death. And so really at that point, it's up to us to decide, what do we do with all this information? If we're going to be a church of and for the city, then how do we handle all of this? Let's see, there's one other thing. Oh, and also there's a news service called Patch, P-A-T-C-H, that is local and is not an official news source, but it basically employs volunteers and bloggers to write about things that are happening in your city. You can sign up for that. It'll push you a news feed every single day, and it'll tell you things that are happening in the city that Twitter often will miss. Okay. One last thing about being a church of and for your city. Jeff Henderson, who is he's the pastor at Gwinnett Church, which is a North Point strategic partner. They're one of the churches in Gwinnett County that partners with North Point and Andy Stanley, and so they've adopted their models and their strategies and their systems. But I had a chance to hear Jeff talk, and this is what he says. When you're thinking about how you might get involved in your city, here are three ways. Number one, own an event. All right? That is, you're probably already doing this. You know, your church puts on some kind of event aimed at your community, whether it's a spring fling or a fall festival or a Thanksgiving food drive or something like that. Consider, as a church, owning an event and doing it really, really well. Okay? So that event that you've been doing for the past 10 years that, you know, you put together at the last minute and you celebrate the successes that come out of it because they're real. Take a step back, evaluate the process, and think, if we just concentrate on this one event, how could we do it even better than we already are? So take one event, own it, and do it really, really well. Number two, participate in an event. So if you're a part of a community or a city that puts on events, they're oftentimes looking for volunteers, right? So you as a church can sign up to be one of the volunteer staffs and participate in this event. Jeff tells the story of their church doing a variation of this. There was a 5K color fun run. You know what I'm talking about? The lights go out. They splatter you with all this cool paint, and they turn the black lights on, and you're running through these different sections. And so they thought about, hey, how could we best kind of partner with them? And they called the community organizer, the event organizer, and they said, hey, what if instead of volunteering, which we're happy to do, what if I could promise you that I would bring 200 people to run in the race of the event? Okay? And so that's what they did. They got a group of people from their church, and 200 might be your church. So you can't do that, right? But you might get a group of people in your church who choose to participate in a very intentional way in an event that your city or community is being part of. And then number three, we kind of talked about this already, but that's promote events. Promote events. So if you have someone at your church who could champion Facebook or Twitter or Instagram or run your website for you, don't be afraid to plug what's happening in your community and in your city. Okay? Again, it's just another way that you can say yes to the people around you and not no. Right? Okay. Number three. You guys with me, okay? All right. Number three. Be strategic and systematic. Be strategic and systematic. This is when, in my leadership meeting, I started to feel people draw up a little bit, okay? And I don't know if you have that same reaction, but anytime you start talking about systems and strategies, for one, there's this cloudiness that comes with it, right? What exactly are you talking about? And then number two, a lot of our small churches value being casual, right? And so any talk of systems and any talk of strategy seems to kind of force upon it something that you're trying to push away from, okay? And what I want us to kind of think about for the next couple of minutes is, how can we live in the tension of both of those things? Instead of treating it as either or, right? You have to be casual, or you have to be strategic. How could you be both of those things? Right? How could you keep that homeliness about you? How could you keep that friendliness and that warmth that comes with you guys being a small church? But how could you go about doing all the things that you're doing even better and with greater intentionality? So here are some things that you might kind of think about. One of the reasons small churches fail to make a big difference is not from a lack of desire or improper theology or even facility. How many of you guys are in what you consider to be a less than adequate facility? You feel the pinch, right? You have a classroom like ours that has 11 kids in it, and there's just no more room to kind of grow. Or you have a fellowship hall that you can't put everybody in at the same time, and so you have to rent a tent to get people out there. You have to set tables up down the hallway just to kind of free up other space. Or you're in a situation where you'd love to do something in your mind that's big and grand, but you just can't envision how to do that. Right? What I want you guys to understand is that small churches aren't failing because of a lack of desire or theology or even facility. Okay? There's a guy named Carl Vatters, K-A-R-L-V-A-T-E-R-S, who runs a website called newsmallchurch.com or org. I can't remember. But he's a pretty incredible guy who's based out of California here. And they've decided to, what he calls, carry rocks in the Volkswagen. So imagine that you have a Volkswagen, and you have these large stones and you have to move from point A to point B. And the only vehicle you have access to is a Volkswagen Beetle. Right? Now you're left with a couple of options. You can A, rip off the top, kind of put some plywood down in the back seat and convert the vehicle to do the task that you want to do. Or you could put some blankets over the seats. You could gently lay the rocks into the seats and take fewer rocks than you wish you would, but you're still moving the rocks. And so they said, look, we're not going to tear our building down. We're not going to go into a building campaign, but we're going to maximize and utilize every aspect of our building and our parking lot and the surrounding green space around us. So, small churches aren't failing because of facilities. They're exploding right now with growth. The number one reason small churches fail to make a big impact in their community is because small churches think like small churches. Okay? The number one reason small churches fail is because small churches think like small churches. How many of you guys came out here on a commercial airline of some kind? Okay, we flew Delta on the way out, and good experience, no complaints there. But it kind of caused me to think on the way out here that there was this time that I had a friend who was a pilot, and he owned a prop plane, a single prop plane, right? And he was like, hey, I'm going to, we were in Huntsville, and he was going to Tuscaloosa, Alabama. He's like, hey, do you want to go with me for the day? And I said, sure, sounds good. So I get to the airport, and when I get there, Marty is already out there doing all the testing on the plane. So he's going around, he's making sure his propeller works, he's making sure all of his instruments are functioning and that they're correct. He's making sure that the fuel is where it needs to be to calculate from point A to point B. Marty is doing literally everything that has to be done for that plane and on that plane. When we got to Delta, there were a ton of people doing all of the things that only one person does with a small plane. I think that's kind of where we find ourselves as leaders a lot of times, is we feel like we have to do literally everything that gets done at a church. And that might be, it might be the truth where you are. Right? We could talk afterwards about your context and the kind of personnel that you have. It could be that you're the only single person who could do all the things that need to be done. But I want to say that that's probably not true for most of us. That we, at some point along the way, believe that so much that we have now failed to kind of exercise the opportunity to delegate and invite people to take ownership in what's happening in the church. Now, again, I grew up at a small church, and one of the things I'm most thankful for is that they trusted a 12-year-old boy enough to get up in the lead prayer occasionally. Or they trusted this, you know, this 14-year-old kid who hasn't got life figured out and, you know, who is going through puberty and who's making all the struggles that teenage, you know, guys go through. They said, hey, would you go up and lead a song for us tonight? Yeah. Or as we thought about things that were going to happen with the youth group, we had these volunteer youth group ministers, but oftentimes they would come to us and say, all right, guys, all right, girls, what do you want to do? Right? All right, if that's what we're going to do, then how are we going to do it? There wasn't a person who said, this is what we're going to do, and this is how we're going to do it. So in our churches, we need to be getting together, and part of discipleship is ownership, right? And so we get together with people, and we begin to think and to dream with them, not for them, about what this church could look like, and we began to hand off opportunities for them to invest deeply in what's happening in our church. Now, if you're a parent and you've ever had small kids, right, or you've seen parents with small kids, sometimes we have to fight that balance of, do we do it for them or do we let them do it, right? Well, what happens if you do it for them all the days of their life? They never learn. And a lot of times they end up spoiled, right? Not to call your kids spoiled, okay? But sometimes that does happen, right? When you do something for someone for so long and you're the only one who does it, then someone feels not, they feel spoiled. And instead of feeling like they have ownership, they feel entitlement, right? So instead of feeling like they own the process, they feel entitled to the process. And if you're not meeting their expectations, then they're going to come to you and let you know that. One of the greatest ways to neutralize that is to give ownership to the church. Okay, so we're a church of 170. And just about every Sunday I get up and I try and praise one of the volunteers who are in our church. I try and take that moment to amplify the fact that we could not do what we do as a church in our community without the help of other people. And so not only do we invite people to take ownership, we brag on them when they do it and they do it well. Okay? So we don't have a full-time youth minister. We don't have a full-time worship minister. We don't have an administrator. Right? We don't have a day school director. I'm the only full-time staff person at our church. And I could not do it all. But I'm thankful that I'm a part of a church that has bought into the principle of volunteerism and ownership. Okay. So if you're going to be strategic and systematic, here's some things that you can do. Adopt and understand organizational management. Okay? Adopt and understand organizational management. Now, the church is not a Fortune 500 company, right? You're not going to be trying to figure out the latest product and how to design it well and then push that product into marketing and pushing it out into the markets for purchase and all that kind of stuff. But understanding the way organizations work and understanding how to help people work better together is a good thing, okay? So the better we can understand the basics of organizational management, the better off we'll be as we think about churches. Churches most often fail not because of their vision or even their mission, right? How many of you guys have a vision or mission statement of some kind? How many of you guys sat around the table way too long figuring that thing out, right? Yeah. So churches don't fail because of their vision or mission, right? Most of us in some way or another say we want to love God, we want to love the world, and we want to make disciples. I mean, that's pretty much the basis of most mission statements that are happening in the churches today. The reason that churches will fail is because of the strategy that fails to employ that mission and that vision. So you're not failing because you don't have a catchy enough, you know, vision statement or mission statement. You're not failing because you said you wanted to love God and love neighbors. The chances are that you might be failing in your church because you don't have a strategy or a system in place to mobilize that mission or that vision. Let's see. Here's the tough thing about strategy is that strategy gets specific. Right? Strategy gets specific. So as you sat around the table and you said, all right, guys, I know what we want to do. We want to love God. We want to love other people. We want to make disciples. We want to help people grow into a deeper relationship with Jesus Christ. When you said all of that, everybody said, yes, we do too, right? So mission and vision, everybody can kind of rally around that. Strategy is when you find your fractures because it gets specific. It talks about how you're going to go about doing that. And so if you're around the table with five other people, sometimes the case is that there are five different strategies, right, for figuring out how you're going to love your community really well or figuring out how you're going to create a Sunday morning environment that seems welcoming. And so there are a lot of things that you kind of have to work through. One of the things, let's see, I'm trying to cut just a little bit here for time. One of the things that putting strategies and systems in place will allow you to do is that as a church, you'll begin to celebrate not just what we call vertical growth, but it'll allow you to celebrate what we call horizontal growth. So vertical growth is that Sunday where, you, for unexplained reasons, you're a church of 50 and you have 70 people. Right? And afterwards, there's all this buzz about, man, did you see how many people we had today? And that's a good thing. You ought to be able to celebrate that, okay? You ought to take the victories that God gives you. But if you have systems and strategies in place, if you understand the way organizations work, and you understand the way to kind of employ and deploy your mission and your vision, then it will allow you to celebrate horizontal growth. And what I mean is that it will allow you to celebrate the times that someone comes to your church and says, hey, I'm thinking about being a member here. And you're like, well, great, let's talk about that. And you go through the whole process. And that person comes in, and you've got a next step that you can point them to, right? So that they don't just come in and take up another seat in the pew or the chair that you have in your auditorium. Systems allow you to have horizontal movement as well. So you can move someone from just being a member to being someone who is involved and engaged to eventually being someone who has ownership. See how that happens? You have your members, you have your engaged, and then you also have your owners in the process. And so having systems in place will allow you to do that. Okay, number four. Plan your Sundays. Anybody ever have that moment when the song leader or the worship leader runs up to the front row and is looking at the index right before worship? Maybe you're that person, I don't know, right? And I grew up with that, and so there is a spirit of casualness and hominess that comes with that. And probably the people who are in your church, who have been a part of your church for the past year or 5 years or 10 years, they know Bob, and they know that that's what Bob does, and they're just like, well, that's Bob, you know, and Bob might get up, and he might, you know, plan to sing verses 1, 2, and 4, and, you know, he gets up, and he's like, well, hey, you know, the Spirit's moving, so we're going to sing 1, 2, 4, and 5. There's this casualness that happens, and that can be good, right? But I'm guessing there have been those times when you've seen that backfire on you as well. And while your members will put up with that, while the people who are, you know, there and who have already bought into who you are and what you're doing, they'll put up with that, your guests probably won't, okay? If you're in a place where you have the potential to have guests, if your guests are coming in and they're seeing things that aren't run very well, chances are they're not going to put up with that. Andy Stanley said one time that you attract who you are, and so if you're comfortable being a church that never plans and you're comfortable being a church that doesn't run things well, then there's a chance that people will come to you because they don't care about that stuff, okay? And so it doesn't mean that you won't grow, but you're going to miss out on an entire field of guests, an entire field of people in your community who want to be a part of your church. They're there on that Sunday, but they witness some kind of incompetency happening in your body, and chances are they're not going to come back. In fact, it says, stats say 91% of guests who come, who have a bad experience, never return, right? Never return. So that's a missed opportunity. As a small church, this is where we were talking about earlier, you have to figure out how to have the ability to leverage your casual and intimate environment for connection, because that's what people want, that's what they value probably about your small church. As a small church, you have to figure out how to leverage your casual and intimate environment for connection, but you'll likely lose the potential for connection if you come off as unprepared. So if you come off as unprepared, even though you're casual, even though you're intimate, even though you've got that thing that people are wanting in your community, people will reject it in the end. All right, so spend time each week working through how you do what you do. Put a system in place that helps you and others who serve on Sunday get out of the way. Okay? One of the things that we found early on in my time at Corners is we went from a church that just kind of put it together at the last minute to a church that just took literally 10 to 15 minutes once a week and figured out how we were going to do what we did. So we have an order of worship every Sunday. The person who's leading worship for us, which rotates on a continuous basis, knows the songs that they're going to lead way ahead of time. Tuesday, this week, I'm here. The guy leading worship is actually in California in a different part. But I emailed him and said, hey, man, don't forget it's really important that we have our order of worship in. Sure enough, by Tuesday, because the expectation is there, by Tuesday he had it in. Our person who puts that part into the bulletin has it now. She can put it into the bulletin. We have a bulletin or a handout every Sunday that lets people know what to expect, what we're going to be doing during the service. We describe it for them. So if they're a guest and they're looking around trying to figure out who's who and what's what, we actually spell it out for them in our handout, in our bulletin. Because we're a bilingual congregation, we have it in Spanish at the bottom as well so that people know where they can drop kids off. So if they know that there's going to be a greeting time in the middle of our service that kind of seems disruptive if you're not used to it, we want our guests, right, to know what's happening, and that's part of that system and strategy. But plan for your Sundays. We want the focus to be on God and what God is calling us to do, not on the person who's up front. And if the person up front is unplanned, then the focus gets shifted to them. All right, plan for Sundays also involves knowing your audience. Knowing your audience. How much time does your leadership, or how much time do you spend thinking about who's going to be in your audience on Sunday? And are you expecting guests to be there? Maybe it's been so long since you... I'm not talking about visitors. I'm not talking about the people who come in from out of town. I'm not talking about the people who are family members of the people who are already at your church. I'm talking about a guest, someone who is at your church for the first time because they're interested in finding a place to land. Right? How many of you guys are thinking about that person when you're planning for your Sunday? If you'll do this, right, if you'll spend time thinking about the fact that on any given Sunday, you're not just going to have Christians who are in your audience, but you're going to have cultural Christians that are people who kind of buy into the value system of what Christianity is, but they're not practicing any formal version of it. And you'll spend time thinking about that you're going to have unbelievers in your audience, then it'll actually change the way you think about and prepare for Sundays. So one of the things we're doing right now is we're thinking about what the language looks like on Sundays. Okay, so if someone is up front and they're speaking, we want them to know that they're speaking not just to the people that we see typically every Sunday. We're speaking to a person who's never been there before. We're speaking to a person who might not believe what we believe. And so that causes us to change our language and to anticipate that each Sunday. Okay, I'll put notes online that have that. Last thing real quick. Stay small. Stay small, my friend. Right? I mean, as you do some of these things, what's going to happen is there will actually be a potential for growth that will happen in your church. I'm not suggesting you do these things to grow. Because honestly, if you're investing in people and not just growth strategies, that's the right thing to do, right? To be a church of and for your community, to figure out ways to be the hands and feet of Jesus. If you're investing in people, that's what we want. But if other people hear that you're doing that, chances are they're going to want to be a part of it. So you've got to figure out ways to stay small. One of the ways that we do this, I'll just run through it real quick, is we have this scheme, this system, called Corner Circles and Tables. And we've organized, or we're in the process of organizing our ministries around this idea. So corners are where we engage. Circles are where we connect. And tables are where we share. And so what the community around this is already doing, right? They're meeting each other out in the city. They're getting together around circles of life, whether it's their neighborhood society or the PTA or the Y or whatever. And then some of those people actually get to know each other really well, and so they end up going out to dinner some night and getting to know each other better, and their kids are playing out in the backyard. What's already happening in our neighborhoods and our communities, we're adopting as a church. We want to engage people in the biggest scale possible, but we want to begin to move relationships into circles where they can find commonality. And ultimately, we want people to be able to land at the table so that any one person in our church can guarantee that when they pull up to the table, there are two or three other people who are going to be sitting there with them. Okay? Guys, thank you all so much. Really appreciate y'all being here. Like I said, I'll post this on my website. It's taylorhammett.com. taylorhammett.com. And we'll put notes and everything up there as well. Thanks, guys. We really appreciate it.